Rank Rats Show on NBC Sports 920 The Game.
Here's Kane now, juking his way to the right, low left corner. Should he score? It's in! They score! It's in! The Hawks win the Stanley Cup!
The Rank Rats Show with Ballpark Frank Harnish.
Cup champions are the Chicago Blackhawks.
And Ryan the Hockey Guy.
It's him. This young man has had a very trying rookie season. What with the litigation, the notoriety, his subsequent deportation to Canada, and that country's refusal to accept him, well, I guess that's more than most 21-year-olds could handle.
There's no script to it at all. We don't know what's going to happen. They're going to drop a puck, and whatever it is, it'll be fun.
Everybody is just on their feet screaming, kill, kill, kill! This is hockey!
Here's the Rink Rat Show on NBC Sports 920 The Game.
And welcome in. It is time once again, Thursday afternoons, 2 to 3 on NBC Sports 920, The Game, The Rink Rat Show, Ballpark Frank, Ryan the Hockey Guy. And right off the bat, we got a lot to get to today. We're going to talk about the standings as we are getting closer and closer to the best playoffs in all of sports, in my opinion, the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll look at the scoring leadership and who might be taking that coveted award away.
Of course we are now.
Well, we talked about it before here and there.
We'll also briefly mention.
Also going to look at maybe a couple feel-good stories here. And full disclosure right off the start of the show, although we are live here in the NBC studios 2 to 3 every Thursday, Ryan's not even live in the building right now, and I'm walking around someplace because of the March Madness that's going on. Ryan, you actually are over at the Westgate right now watching some basketball and coordinating our remotes over there.
Right. It's funny because when this goes to air, I'll probably be in my car listening to myself speak, which is a horrifying thing for somebody that talks on the radio. You know what I mean? Like, have you ever had those moments where you've pre-recorded something or you've done a spot for somebody and it's going to play later in the day and you happen to catch it, and then all of a sudden you're like, man, that's what I sound like?
When I first started in this business, all the time. But yeah. Now I'm just used to it, and I'm like, who's that idiot? Oh, wait, that's me. So,
I it's funny because there have been times where I've caught myself and I'm like, I disagree with myself, and it's very weird, and I have these emotional midlife crisis because I have no idea what to do with myself because I just said something on the radio that I don't agree with 25 minutes later.
Can't remember that happening, though. It probably has at some point. The only thing I can ever get over, I am not a big fan of my voice.
Really?
I don't like the way I sound on the air. Some people do, some people don't, but there's not much I can do with it. This is what I was given, so
sure, yeah.
So, I did it years and years ago, and I'll throw this out there now because whatever. When I started in this business over 20 years ago on KORK, which was Big Bands, Ballads, and Broadway, our moniker was that we played more Frank Sinatra than anybody else in town at the time.
Oh, please.
And that
something.
Was actually on the 920.
Uh-huh.
That was
okay.
KORK.
Okay.
And a woman called me up once, and she told me what a nice, polite young man I was, and because I was told, actually, talk like you're always talking to your grandparents.
Uh-huh.
Just kind of calm, make sure you enunciate everything.
Sure.
And she was telling me how much she liked me and what a pleasant young man I was, and I was like, oh, well, that's kind of nice. And she goes, and I just love your voice. And I'm like, oh, well, thank you very much. And she goes, yeah, you sound just like Kermit the Frog. And I just love Kermit. And all of a sudden, talk about that on the pedestal. And
oh, man.
Kermit the Frog here.
Yeah, you do. Wow.
I never.
Just do it that. Do the whole podcast in Kermit's voice.
No, it's
that'd
the Recrat Show on NBC Sports 920 The Game with Ian.
God, that's awesome.
But yeah,
seriously.
And I was like, wow, I don't even know what to say to that. Thank you, I guess, but I think I want to go have my vocal cords cut out. But anyhow, that was many years ago.
But before we started the show today, you were doing some very interesting vocal exercises in the studio.
Oh, I always clear my throat.
I'd never heard those before.
No, I do that frequently.
We've been doing this is 46 now, number 46 of the podcast last show, and I've never heard the vocal exercises before.
I probably do it either in the office or someplace or before you sneak in here, because a lot of times you're running around with some salespeople or something else asking you questions. I frequently do it.
You make my day job sound so exciting.
You should hear me when I'm doing the comp overnight or something like that, when I'm when I have that 1 minute break when you have to sound high energy and that kind of stuff, and I've just been sitting there, and it's like, oh wait, I got 20 seconds left in a song. It's like, oh, it sounds like there's a cancer patient in there or something like that, just, you know, with throat cancer. I mean, it's a clearing my throat, and it's not a pretty thing. But anyway.
I was gonna ask you about your concert last week. How'd that go?
It was great.
Yeah?
John Fogerty rocked. I mean, for a guy that's going to be 72 years old in May, I could not believe the energy, the way he's jumping around. I'm sitting up there going, wow, I mean, I know I'm old, but I'm not nearly this old. And this guy is putting me to shame. And then Kenny Aronoff, the drummer, 64 years old, and he's bashing out this drum solo. And all of a sudden, I felt very guilty about the shape I have allowed myself to become sitting on my butt talking on a microphone with these guys running around with all the energy they have. So maybe it'll get my lazy butt back in the gym. Well, we'll see.
There you go. I'm glad you had fun, buddy.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a great show. I was surprised. Did all the old Creedence stuff, had some nice stories and everything, too, and played about an hour, 45 minutes or so. So,
oh, not bad.
You know, at the Encore, doing the residency there, and I guess he's got another one coming up in May. So, but thanks for asking. It was actually a very, very good time. And thanks to Mark Moore for hooking that up for me. So, by the way, if you want to know how big the Encore Theater is, I can tell you that the balcony goes to row L, because that's where we were. So if we would have been any farther back, we'd have been behind the back wall. But it's fine. It's a small little intimate setting, so it was all good.
Oh, that's funny. That's good.
Let's talk about some hockey.
Yeah, is that what we do here?
No, that's what allegedly we do. Every now and then, occasionally, we slip in a little of the stuff going on the ice.
Sure.
And I want to start it off because I saw the highlights from this. It happened a little bit earlier on, but the game in Norway.
Yeah.
Against the Storhamar Dragons.
You're a saint for trying to pronounce this stuff.
And the Sparta Warriors. The game was 2-1. So you're like, well, okay, why do we care about a game in Norway?
Right.
Well, you might want to care about it because the game went 8 overtimes. Over 8.5 hours of hockey. They're in the playoffs. So there's no tie, and we're talking not a 5-minute overtime 3-on-3. Mm-hmm. I don't think it would have lasted that long.
No.
But almost 8 full overtimes, 217 minutes and 14 seconds of actual on-ice hockey time, and the final score 2-1. The shots on goal 96-93.
Oh my
gosh. Kudos to these goalies.
Right.
But, wow, I've never seen anything like this. The longest game in NHL history was like a 5-overtime game way back years and years ago.
Yeah.
But 8 overtimes, and it's funny because some of the players talking about it, they were like, well, I mean, you know, we were eating, you know, sandwiches and drinking some beverages and that in between periods, so it wasn't that bad. But, I mean, they had to be absolutely dying. I don't know if you heard this part of it or not. But the police department, the local police department in Norway, actually sent out 2 different tweets for people following them.
Sure.
Letting people know that, no, you people that are calling for missing persons reports and the people that you know that went to the hockey game, the game's actually still going on. They have not been abducted. They're not in a local hospital or something like that. They're actually still at the game because the game is still going on. Ended at like 2:46 in the morning.
So I guess they didn't televise the game then?
Apparently not.
Or the family members just don't care enough about hockey to know that the game's still going on. That's the thing I love about overtime hockey. The overtime playoff hockey is that it doesn't end. It does not end until there's a winner. And that's, you know, if you got to be there 8 hours, if you got to be there 10 hours, it's not going to end until somebody puts the puck in the net and ends the game. It's just that simple.
You know, it's interesting, and I'm going to go in. Some of the people aren't going to care about this, but because we work in the business, I always look at this kind of stuff differently. Mm-hmm. I think about when the 51s have a baseball game that goes into extra innings, and the traffic department after those games is like, why didn't these spots play in this and that? And you have to reconcile the logs and you make goods and this and that. Can you imagine the traffic department up here assuming that these games are on the radio? Oh, yeah, by the way, that 3.5 hours we blocked up for the hockey game, it lasted 8.5 hours, and that's without pregame and postgame. So basically, half a day's spots didn't play.
I mean, you got to argue that there probably wasn't a postgame show. I mean, the guys doing play-by-play for this, I would say, probably lost their voice around the 7th overtime.
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. They might have left the building.
Like, could you imagine calling that game? I mean, seven overtimes. I would literally crack the mic and say, they shot the puck in the zone. Shot on goal. Now it's in the other zone. shot on goal. That's all I'd be doing.
He shoots.
Why?
He shoots. Of course, he doesn't score. Yeah. So we're still going on.
Almost 200 shots in the game and only two goals.
By the way, the previous record for the longest game ever was set in 1936. The Detroit Red Wings and Montreal Maroons, 176 minutes and 30 seconds, 1936.
Wow.
So 217 minutes, 14 seconds. They said that both teams were just like, even the losing team at the end was like, we almost don't even care. We can go home now. By the way, the guy that scored the game winner,
He
said he was happy because he finally got to go back to the hotel because he took a vicious slash in his calf in the fifth overtime, and he said it was really, really starting to bother him that he couldn't even hardly walk or whatever. So glad that he could finally get it iced down because only a hockey game later he finally got to get it attended to.
And what's funny about all this is recall a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, we were talking about some hockey players in the NHL talking about things that they would change about the game. And Ryan Johansson had a ridiculously stupid quote about how it's too many games and they need to shorten the season and all that garbage. And then you got a guy that can't skate because he took a slash in the fifth overtime and then wins the game in the eighth overtime. And he's playing in a Norwegian league. He's not even playing in the NHL. And they are willing in that league to do whatever it takes to win. Win in the playoffs, win a championship, win just for the sake of winning and for their pride. And then you've got these spoiled athletes like Ryan Johansson in the NHL playing in the best league in the world, having the opportunity to play for a Stanley Cup every single season, bitching and complaining about the fact that they've got to play 82 games. It's ridiculous.
And by the way, this obviously is not like, it's not like the Norwegian NHL or something like that. There was a little over 5,000 people at the start of the game, over 1,000 still at the end of it. So we're not talking the highest level. We're probably talking like the Wranglers or something when they were here in town. Right, and that's no disrespect to them.
No.
And yet these guys were out there that long. So kudos to them. But I can't even... I like to think that in my younger days in that, I mean, I never left games early. Very seldom. If I was with some other people and I wasn't driving, that's why I almost always made sure that I drove. I don't know if I would have hung around for eight overtimes. But yet at the same point, I can't imagine leaving a game like that if I'm cheering for one of these teams.
Yeah, I mean, if you're invested in it, why would you? You know, and I don't go to games. Granted, I haven't gone to very many since we don't have a team just yet. But I don't go to games with the intention of leaving them. When the Vegas Golden Knights go into the playoffs, when they become a playoff team, and when they are in overtime games that last two or three extra periods, I'm not leaving. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me because eventually the game's going to end and everyone's going to get to catch up on their sleep. But when you go to a game, when you invest the money, when you invest the time and the energy to care about a team, you stay until the end. You just do because you're not playing. You're just getting drunk and drinking, you know, and drinking and eating and having a good time.
And since you threw that in, I got to throw this in because it just popped in my head and it's almost like you segued it in there for me.
I do what I can.
But I remember when I used to go to the Blackhawk games all the time and they would cut off the beer sales midway through the third period.
Mm-hmm.
If they do that in Norway, is there some point where they're, all right, we have to start opening up beer sales again here because we still might actually be here a while because I can't imagine a lot of diehard hockey fans who do go to drink the beers and have a good time that all of a sudden they cut it off in the middle of the third period and, oh, by the way, now we're almost nine periods later that we're still did they reinstate it? Maybe they don't even have that rule over there in Norway, but... But again, that might entice some people to maybe leave when they wouldn't have otherwise or something going, I can't even get a beer now and I've been here 8.5 hours. I haven't had a beer. They might be jonesing for it.
Yeah, but just imagine the value that you get back from paying for those tickets. You know what I mean? If you paid, I don't know, $20 for the ticket and you end up getting eight, nine, ten periods of hockey, I mean, who's not going to love that? I mean, then again, not everyone's like us where we just live for this stuff. I mean, you're talking to a guy, literally, you're talking to a guy that on hockey day in America watches the 9:30 game, the 12 o'clock game, the 3 o'clock game, and the 6 o'clock game. So I'm not, like, watching 12 periods of hockey is not outside the realm of possibility for me on a daily basis. So, you know, I just, that's how I think. It's awesome.
No, I agree with you. Real quick, too, I want to throw this in when it comes to watching all those games. One of my favorite things on NHL Network is when they take the games and they throw them into a one-hour block. They, you know, now we move forward due to this time. But there's been several times when they're doing that when I watch four or five games in a row, and it's like, okay, now here's Boston and Philadelphia. Now we have the Kings and the Ducks coming up, and now we got the Black Sox. I mean, I'm watching all these games, and you don't get the whole game, obviously, but it's so concise, and they break it down, and you get a quick commercial break or whatever, but I'm like, I love how they do that because it's really let me watch a lot more hockey than I otherwise, you know, with not having a hockey package or whatever, but they basically show everything really important that happened.
Right.
But it's that is one of my favorite things. And, you know, and I've never been one of the big fans of all the people taping something, just fast forward through everything or this or that. Or a lot of times I never used to be able to watch stuff that was over once I knew the result.
Yeah.
But in the NHL, I'm finding now it's a little bit different as I'm trying to get more ingrained to every other team out there and a little bit deeper than just the Blackhawk fan of me and trying to encompass the entire league in that. But, man, I love how they do that with the 1 hour. And you see the game, you see everything important in the game, and then bang, on to the next game. That's a cool thing.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, too. It's good because if you're coming from it from a learning experience, which I think is what you're kind of looking at it as, I think it's a great tool. And I think, to be honest with you, I think that it would help a lot of people that aren't into hockey or on the bubble or, you know, everyone in Vegas that isn't a hockey fan. They would be well served to watch a couple of those games because, like you said, it's all the important stuff. It's going to be big hits. It's going to be goals. It's going to be big saves. So it's going to be all the action condensed into that 1 hour time period, and you get an entire game's worth of that. It helps to sell the brand. It helps to sell the NHL. So I think it's a really great idea that they did it. I think it's really well done, too. You know, it's one of those scenarios where anything you can do to get yourself up to speed with hockey before the Vegas Golden Knights come to town is something that you should do. Everybody should be watching those games.
All right, the Rink Rat Show, NBC Sports 920 The Game, and you can check out this show along with all the other previous ones and podcasts that we've done at lvsportsnetwork.com. Ballpark Frank, Ryan the Hockey Game. Ryan the Hockey Guy.
Ryan the Hockey Guy.
I don't know what's going on. All right.
At Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter. Just shameless plug. And shameless plug.
I have a Twitter out there, too, which I really need to start using. I keep on saying that.
I keep trying to help you, man.
You know, I'm an old dog, and I don't like new tricks.
Okay.
But I'm not as old as John Fogerty, and I don't have nearly the energy.
He's into new tricks, I'm sure.
Oh, maybe. Well, I don't know. He's had the same wife for years and years. So.
I mean, I wasn't going there.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, on the ice right now, and we've talked about this, and again, we are taping this on Wednesday, but most of the games that are happening on Wednesday night, there's only like four of them. There's not a bunch of teams that are going to affect the standings at the top. In fact, all the first-place teams basically are not playing tonight, so it's not that big of a deal. But a while back, we were talking about winning the President's Trophy, the best record in the NHL. We both thought that Washington was going to do it. I thought that Minnesota had a shot at the time. Mm-hmm. Well, Minnesota has definitely had their struggles of late. As a matter of fact, they're not even in first place anymore, 4-6 in their last 10 games. They've looked very pedestrian of late. But the other team that's actually looked kind of pedestrian, the Washington Capitals, up until last night, Ovechkin hasn't scored. Now, granted, they still have 97 points, but they're 5-5-0 in their last 10 games. And don't look now, but they might not even win the Metropolitan. And we talked about how tough the Metropolitan is.
Yeah.
The Pittsburgh Penguins are right behind them. They have 95 points. They also have a game in hand. Are you still convinced that Washington just automatically wins the President's Trophy? Because one thing that I've noticed, and Ovechkin scored last night being Tuesday night, actually. This is Thursday. So Ovechkin finally scored Tuesday night, but that was his first goal in 10 games. That was his first goal since February 19th. Mm-hmm. That's an incredible. And what I saw when I was watching them was when Ovechkin's not going, that whole team isn't going.
You know, I don't know that this is going to prevent them from winning the President's Trophy because it seems like that's all they could ever win. But you're seeing what happens to Alex Ovechkin around this time of year. And that's very simply that teams pay a lot more attention to defense and they pay a lot more attention to superstars and matchups and getting the stops of the superstars that they need to get the stops of. And Alex Ovechkin went 10 games without a goal. That as a Washington Capitals fan, should concern you heading into the playoffs, because the ice is only going to get smaller, and it's only going to be tougher and tougher and tougher for him to find areas to score. And if he can't do it right now in the regular season, they're in trouble. They're in major trouble when they get into the postseason. Now, if they draw a team like Toronto or something like that, a team that hasn't been there before, they'll probably get out of the first round. But once they get into a matchup against a team that's actually played in the playoffs, like the Pittsburgh Penguins, they're in trouble. Absolutely in trouble.
Is Pittsburgh clearly the team in the Metropolitan? Because we've talked all season long about how the Metropolitan is clearly the best division in hockey. Right now you have Washington 97 points, mm-hmm. Pittsburgh 95, again, a game in hand. Columbus 94, they also have a game in hand with Washington. They've both played 68, the Penguins and the Blue Jackets, whereas the Capitals have played 69. So they're all right there. I'm expecting Washington to find a way to still probably win that President's Trophy, but it would not surprise me whatsoever if the Penguins did. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that I can completely count out Columbus to somehow sneak in there and win the damn thing as well. I don't think they will, mm-hmm. but, you know, they're kind of quietly going along as one of the best teams. As a matter of fact, the third best team in the entire NHL, in the toughest division in the NHL.
I mean, at this point in time, you know, we said it at the beginning of the year. We said it midway through the year. We're going to say it again now. Every time we think Columbus is going to come back to earth, they just simply don't. Maybe they are this good. Maybe they just are this good. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to be in the playoffs, but clearly they're a very good regular season team this year, and why couldn't they? Why can't they win the President's Trophy? They might. I don't know that I would want that if I was Columbus going into the playoffs, you know, for the first time in a while and having extra pressure on you with winning the President's Trophy, but you know what? They're doing something right.
Would the extra pressure be worth it because you get the home ice advantage? Mm. Or do you think it would be better to kind of sit back there a little bit, not have the spotlight completely on you? Because we've seen in the past that home ice doesn't necessarily mean anything in the NHL playoffs. However, then, and of course, I always put on my Blackhawk cap because that's the team that I've paid the most attention to during my entire life watching hockey.
Right.
I look at something last year where the Hawks lost to St. Louis essentially because they didn't have the home ice in that Game 7. So certain teams in some situations, sometimes that Game 7 can be a killer to not have it at home. Like if I'm the Pittsburgh Penguins, I'm not as concerned about it. Mm-hmm. We've been there before. We've done that before. We can win home or away. You have to beat us. With Columbus, I would almost think that they would maybe want that home ice a little bit more than some others. But again, at the same time, I don't know. I mean, is there added pressure? Once you get to the playoffs, isn't the pressure already there?
Not for a team that's not been there before. You know what I mean? Again, as good of a season as Columbus has had this year, when they get into the playoffs, if they're playing the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round, they're not favored. There's no pressure on them. You get what I'm saying? Like,
no, I totally get what you're saying, and I agree with you.
But here's the thing where it becomes interesting for a team like Columbus, because they haven't been to the playoffs very regularly, and they haven't been to the playoffs the last couple of seasons. If they were to win the President's Trophy, if they were to have the best record in the Eastern Conference and therefore the NHL, they would have the weakest opponent round one. That opponent would look like one of these three, the New York Islanders, the Tampa Bay Lightning, or the Toronto Maple Leafs. Okay, so if Columbus was able to draw Toronto, then it would be worth it. You know, then it would be worth it because you know you're getting out of the first round. As good as Toronto is, they're not ready. They're not ready to win a round in the playoffs. So I would like that matchup. Now, here's where it gets tricky, though. Tampa Bay, as bad as they have been all year, and the fact that they have been missing Steven Stamkos all year, they are right on the bubble, right there. They've got 77 points. They're tied with the New York Islanders. So they're right there. If I was Columbus, I would not want to see Tampa Bay in the first round because we're talking about a team that went to the Stanley Cup Finals, went to the Eastern Conference Finals the next year. They're a very experienced team, and I get it. They don't have Ben Bishop anymore, but Andrei Vasilevsky is the starter. He's the number one de facto, and he is good enough to get a win in an opening round series against a team that doesn't have the experience.
The other thing scary about Tampa Bay right now is they've won four games in a row. They're playing really good hockey. And they're doing it with a lot of guys out with injuries.
You get
everybody back healthy in the playoffs as well, and a team that's been there before and knows what they're doing, they can be really scary. All right, let me throw a different scenario at you.
Sure.
Because I don't know how many teams, even with Columbus's great record and having 94 points at this time, I don't know how many teams they're favored over when it comes to the elite of the elite.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that against Pittsburgh. You know, that's a tough matchup, and Pittsburgh's going to be favored. What if Columbus and Washington played each other? Who has the more pressure on them? Because, yeah, Columbus hasn't been there before, but Washington has the choke collar on them all the time from all the years that they've done that. That might be a fun series to watch just to see how the nerves would affect both teams out there. Would Columbus go, hey, you know what? We've had a great year here. We've got nothing to lose because we're playing the team that won the President's Trophy? Or would Washington be going, okay, look, we're finally not playing Pittsburgh or something. We can't lose to these guys now, too. I mean, I don't know how that one would go. That might be a fun series to watch just from the nerve aspect of it.
Well, I want to backtrack just a minute just to kind of set this answer up. But just because Columbus wouldn't be favored by anybody to beat the Penguins, I think they would.
Really?
I do. And the reason being is they play Pittsburgh harder than they play any other team. They don't like each other. Scott Hartnell hates Sidney Crosby. Brandon Dubinsky hates Sidney Crosby. And that has been a long-standing rivalry for a very, very long time. Not to mention the fact that Sergei Bobrovsky is playing out of his mind, and Columbus can score, and they can score in bunches. They
you give Bobrovsky in the playoffs and not over Murray?
I think that if he stays healthy and everything's going as it is, I think that they have the firepower to match Pittsburgh, and they have the tenacity and the anger and the hatred for that team to make it a hell of a series. I think, like, if you look at it, I would say Columbus-Pittsburgh would be a dream first-round matchup because it would just be full of hate, and it would probably go seven. I really believe that. Now, I'm not saying that Columbus will beat the Penguins if they play in the first round, but I would not be surprised if they did. With Washington-Columbus, I wouldn't want any part of that if I was the Washington Capitals. I wouldn't want any part of it because of the same reasons. They play superstar teams very, very good. They're tenacious. They just don't care. They hit. They score. They come up with timely saves. I would be very cautious to play the Columbus Blue Jackets. I really would. Because, again, they don't have any pressure. They have no pressure. They're there. It's great. It's been a fantastic story. No one's going to take away what they did this year in the regular season. But they're playing with house money in the playoffs. They really are.
We're talking about the Metropolitan here, Washington, Pittsburgh, Columbus. The Rangers are also having a really good season with 90 points of their own. Not a lot of people necessarily talking about them. Are we remiss or looking not being a fair assessor here of the Montreal Canadiens? Are they? I mean, they're clearly the best team in the Atlantic right now. Do they have a shot? Does Ottawa have a shot, who's only a point behind Montreal? Yeah. Or is the winner from the East coming out of the Metropolitan? Because that has clearly been the best division with probably three, if not four, the four best teams in the entire East all in that same division.
You know, here's the thing that I find really funny about the playoff scenarios that are coming out. The New York Rangers are currently in the first wild card spot with 90 points. Okay, let this sink in for a minute.
I know where you're going here.
The New York Rangers have 90 points, 44 wins, 24 losses, two overtime losses, 90 points in 70 games, and they're in a wild card spot, okay? The Montreal Canadiens have played 70 games, 39 wins, 23 losses, eight overtime losses for 86 points. If the playoffs were to start today, the Montreal Canadiens would host the New York Rangers and be a number one seed, okay? The team with 86 points would have home ice advantage in a playoff series, in an opening round playoff series against a team that has four more points than they do and six more wins. Like, I'm dreaming of a scenario in which the New York Rangers have to open up on the road against the Montreal Canadiens, and then I just want to see which fan base bitches more. Really, like, because the Montreal Canadiens are going to say, oh, it's not fair, we're playing a team that's better than us. But then the New York Rangers fans are going to say, well, it's not fair. We have a better record. Now we got to go play on the road for four of the seven games. But Montreal, how could you buy them? How could you buy them in the playoffs? They're going to be playing a team that is statistically better than them first opening round.
Let me ask you this then, okay? Because Ottawa's only a point behind Montreal. Is it in Ottawa's best interest to advance past the first round of the playoffs to not catch Montreal so they don't have to play the Rangers in the first round? Is winning the Atlantic, because of the scenario that you just pointed out there, actually almost a negative this year
as
opposed to being the second or third place team?
Absolutely. If I was Ottawa, I would do everything in my power to just stay in the number two spot. I wouldn't want to be in the number one spot. Not that I think that Ottawa can't beat the New York Rangers. I feel like they can, especially since Lundqvist is out for the next 2 to 3 weeks. He's going to be rusty coming into the playoffs. So that's obviously something that you got to pay attention to. But
Ranta's played well for them.
Ranta has, he's played well. But again, if the New York Rangers are going to go anywhere in the playoffs, it's going to be because of Henrik Lundqvist. It's not going to be because of Antti Ranta. So, I mean, if I was Ottawa or if I was Boston, I would stay where I'm at. I would not want to be in the number one spot in the Atlantic Division because you're going to play. You're not going to play the team that just gets in. It's not going to be you versus the New York Islanders, or the Tampa Bay Lightning, or the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's going to be you versus the fifth best team in the Metropolitan Division.
By the way, of late, the Atlantic Division is actually playing pretty good. In the last 10 games, Montreal is 7-3-0, Ottawa 7-2-1, Boston 7-3-0, Tampa Bay 7-2-1. So although the Atlantic hasn't been nearly as good as the Metropolitan, in their most recent small sample size,
they've
all actually been playing pretty well.
If I was Washington, and I'm not joking whatsoever. If I was Washington, I would start tanking right now. I would just go on like another 5 or 6 game losing streak and try to solidify that number one wild card spot so you play Montreal in the first round. Really, I'm not like, because then you're playing Montreal and then you get the winner of Ottawa Boston.
Well, that's a lot of tanking to drop all three of those teams.
I mean, the Rangers are only 7 points away, you know?
So I understand what you're saying.
If I was the Washington Capitals and I was trying to figure out the best course of action to get past the Pittsburgh Penguins, I would try to just get into the next bracket. I would try to get into the Atlantic bracket. Period. End of story.
Boy, would you ever be second guessed then if you lost a 7-game series because you didn't have home ice?
They don't win 7-game series anyways.
I'm just saying.
I mean, they don't win game 7.
I understand,
you know
what
I mean?
You're saying.
It doesn't matter. It's not going to make a difference.
But in all reality, that's not going to happen. They are not going to try to drop into the wild
card. No, it's not. But if they were smart, they would do that. Because then, again, they'd have to beat Montreal, and then they'd have to beat either Ottawa or Boston. Okay? That's absolutely doable. It's absolutely doable. Then they could finally get to the conference finals and then lose to the Pittsburgh Penguins again.
I don't know. Maybe somebody in their organization goes, remember San Jose? Last year they went all the way to the finals?
No, they
weren't the number one team out there, okay? Let's not be the number one team.
Yes, right. And the biggest test that the San Jose Sharks had last year was the Los Angeles Kings in the first round. There were no other teams left that were going to beat them.
All right, well, stranger things have happened there. But and again, if you are just tuning in, it is the Rink Rat Show, NBC Sports 920, the game. Currently, Washington, 97 points. Pittsburgh, 95. Columbus, 94. The Rangers, 90. All four of them from the Metropolitan. The Montreal Canadiens, the best team in the Atlantic, with 86 points. Fewer than all four of those, yet they would host and have home ice advantage in the first rounds because of the way that things are going. When we come back, we're going to take a look and see what's going on in the West. We'll also look at some of the current point standings. And, we like the feel-good stories here. And we told you about little 11-year-old Olivia Letich last time when we were on the show. Well, I found another story here about a young boy who has lymphoma, and yet a certain NHL team invited him in, said put on the pads. He went out on the ice and actually got to play goalie with his heroes. We'll tell you that and a whole lot more. It's the Rink Rat Show, NBC Sports 920 The Game. We'll be right back.